By 1907, Carl and Emma Jung had been married for 4 years and had 2 young daughters, Agatha, age 3, and Grete, almost 2. 4 years might not be long, but it was long enough for Emma to discover the extent and complexity of her situation, though not long enough to know what to do about it. The problem was twofold. Carl's outward manner, so confident he could come across as arrogant, concealed a very different and infinitely more complicated interior, one which constantly eluded Emma, however hard she tried to understand it. The second problem was no easier to solve. Carl was always flirting with other women, and they with him. On top of all this, Carl was extremely ambitious, working day and night at the Burgotsley Asylum like a man possessed, driven by a conviction that he had a special understanding of the insane, because in many ways he was so like them. Emma considered delivering her husband an ultimatum. Either change his ways or she would divorce him. A shocking and rare thing at the beginning of the 20th century, and one utterly alien to the retiring character of Emma Jung. She felt lost in the labyrinth of her marriage to Carl, beset with problems. Life could not go on the way it was. Apart from threatening divorce, Emma now insisted on moving out of the asylum and having a house of her own. The rumours flying about the place were too hurtful. Apparently, Herr Dr. Jung was on the verge of leaving her to marry his patient, Sabina Spielrein. People whispered about her wealth, too, and the fact that Carl hadn't had a penny when they married, the inference being obvious. She wanted to have a home of their own, where they could lead a proper, private family life. It didn't take much insistence on Emma's part. All his life, Jung had longed for such a family house, dreamed of it, had visions of it. Money not being an object, they decided to build their own. They purchased a plot of land on the right bank of the Lake of Zurich, some 15 kilometres from Zurich itself. Within a month of buying the plot, Carl had already drawn a rough sketch of the property. The house has a tower at the front entrance and a veranda at the side, surrounded by a garden with a pavilion by the lake. The main room on the ground floor is as large as a medieval hall. The drawings were enclosed in a letter sent to Ernst Fichte, an architect and cousin of Carl's.
I want steeped gables. All windows on the raised ground floor are to have grates. Downstairs, the windows high and narrow, of a Renaissance character, leaded, some heraldic.
Emma, modest by temperament, was beginning to feel uneasy as the budget for the house rose higher and higher. If their architect was alarmed at Carl's overly detailed plans, he didn't show it. He just went ahead and produced a charming set of sketches and drawings of houses firmly in the local Lake of Zurich style. Emma must have had a hand in this. They certainly don't look the least bit medieval. They don't even include a tower. At which point Carl put his foot down. How could he live in a house without a tower? It appeared in the next set of drawings, a month later, a large double tower. 2 weeks later came the final design, with a single tower functioning as a stairwell. Carl, so progressive in his treatment of patients, was, in many ways, a typical husband of the times. As head of house, he expected to take all the decisions, and Emma did as the books on how to be a good wife advised. She submitted to her husband, but learned to quietly circumvent him when he wasn't looking. Emma was beginning to take a more active role at the Burgotsley Asylum. For years, she had been writing down Jung's dictation, writing up reports, helping with research. She was learning firsthand how dreams and associations revealed the hidden desires of the unconscious and the secrets of repression. It was an apprenticeship by default. Whatever else Emma's early life might have provided, it could never have competed with the fevered atmosphere at the asylum in those early years.
It is amusing to see how the female outpatients go about diagnosing each other's erotic complexes, although they have no insight into their own.
Carl wrote to Professor Freud in June 1907, quite forgetting the trouble he had with his own. That autumn of 1907, Carl was in bed with severe gastroenteritis, requiring Emma's nursing and stabilising. Up one minute, down the next, was the pattern. By February, he was ill again.
A beastly attack of influenza. All sorts of psychogenic complications insinuated themselves into my influenza, and this has had a bad effect on my convalescence.
The most likely reason was quarrels with Emma over his continued involvement with his former patient, Sabina Spielrein. Emma probably knew it was not a fully sexual relationship, but it was a highly charged emotional one, much more than the usual infatuations, and Carl seemed quite unable or unwilling to break it off. By March 1909, the building of the house was finished. Emma and her newly engaged staff, a cook, a kitchen maid, two housemaids, the children's maid, one handyman come gardener, worked hard at arranging all the furniture, tapestries and paintings. One glance at the library is enough to confirm Emma's hand. No dark wood, nothing medieval or 18th century in the decor, but a spacious, light room overlooking the lake. The woodwork painted pale green with a white and green tiled oven by the door. Carl's study, though, has the feel of a chapel, small and dimly lit by three narrow leaded windows, each with a stained glass panel representing the most Christian of iconographies, the flagellation of Christ, the crucifixion of Christ, and the entombment. No one could enter this sanctum without knocking, not even Emma. Before they moved into the new house, there were two events which took up a great deal of Emma's time and concern. The one happy, the other quite the opposite. To start with, happiness. Franz Carl Jung was born on the 28th of November 1908, their third child.
You can imagine our joy. The birth went off normally. Mother and child are doing well. It's too bad we aren't peasants anymore. Otherwise I could say, now that I have a son, I can depart in peace. My wife is, of course, nursing the child herself. A pleasure for both of them.
From all this, one might assume that Carl was as happy to have a son as Emma. Not so. 6 days after the birth, he wrote a letter revealing a man in turmoil.
I regret so much. I regret my weakness and curse the fate that is threatening me. I fear for my work, for my life's task. Earlier and earlier childhood memories have been surfacing. My mind is torn to its very depths. I, who had to be a tower of strength for many weak people, am the weakest of all. Will you understand that I am one of the weakest and most unstable of human beings?
The recipient of this letter was Sabina Spielrein.
It is my misfortune that I cannot live without the joy of love, of tempestuous, ever-changing love. This demon stands as an unholy contradiction to my compassion and my sensitivity. When love for a woman awakens in me, the first thing I feel is regret. Pity for the poor woman who dreams of eternal faithfulness and other impossibilities, and is destined for a painful awakening out of all these dreams.
As the months passed, Spielrein became even more obsessed with Jung. Then she decided she wanted a child by him. That brought Carl sharply back to reality. The last thing he wanted was a child by Sabina. He wanted an infatuation and someone to talk to about his torments. At some point in early 1909, Emma realized Carl was seeing Sabina Spielrein again, and it confronted her with the greatest dilemma of her life so far. Married for 6 years, the mother of three children, and in love with a husband who could not stop flirting with other women, she became so desperate she took an action utterly alien, even repugnant to her. She wrote an anonymous letter to Fräulein Spielrein's mother, warning her to rescue her daughter before Dr. Jung ruined her.
I have always told your daughter a sexual relationship was out of the question,
Jung wrote to Fräulein Spielrein's mother after she had received the anonymous letter. There had been a row with Emma.
Meanwhile, I have learnt an unspeakable amount of marital wisdom,
Carl wrote to Freud.
Until now, I had a totally inadequate idea of my polygamous components, despite all self-analysis. Now, I know how and where the devil can be laid by the heels. A woman patient, whom, years ago, I pulled out of a very tricky neurosis with unstinting effort, has violated my confidence and friendship in the most mortifying way imaginable. She has kicked up a vile scandal solely because I denied myself the pleasure of giving her a child. I have always acted the gentleman towards her, but before the bar of my rather too sensitive conscience, I nevertheless don't feel clean, and that is what hurts the most, because my intentions were always honourable. But you know how it is. The devil can use even the best of things for the fabrication of filth.
This is surely Jung at his worst, feeling sorry for himself, indignant even. Reading between the lines, it sounds as though Jung went much further with the relationship than was proper, but not so far as to become what Fräulein Spielrein enigmatically called her poet.
These painful yet extremely salutary insights have churned me up hellishly inside, but for that very reason, I hope, have secured me moral qualities which will be of the greatest advantage in later life. The relationship with my wife has gained enormously in assurance and depth. My small sum is flourishing. My wife is in good shape.
By June 1909, the Jungs had settled into their house on the lake, and a new era began. It was part of the agreement Emma reached with Carl after the showdown. New house, new life. Emma knew this was one thing Carl would never want to give up, this home, this stability. Characteristically, he failed to praise Emma for her part in it, though he knew well enough how much courage it must have taken for her to confront him, rescuing him from himself.